This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. This is Cruise Control, the car show here on BFM 89.9. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio, as ever on Cruise Control, by Daniel Sherman Fernandez from DSF.my. Say hello, Daniel.
I'm so happy you know my name in full.
I gave you your full name and everything, right?
Thank you, thank you.
Daniel Sherman Fernandez, Esquire, here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you, Richard.
No Arif Roos today, though.
Yes, I heard you tried to get rid of him.
We tried.
You know. But he's just away for a few hours.
Just for a few hours, unfortunately. Yes, he can't join us. The boy with the news, Mr. Arif Roos, can't give us any news today.
But he has shared some news with you.
He did indeed share some news. So, of course, we do have some news coming up very shortly. And then our AT&T segment will be about what factors affect electric vehicle battery life. And also, we don't even have a car review today. However, it's not all panic. We have something.
No.
We will be talking about why we can't buy a 2x4 pickup truck with an auto gearbox.
Exactly.
Sounds like very exciting stuff.
Have you ever thought about
it? I have not. But before we do that, of course, here's the news with no Arif Roos. Right, so standing in a parking space, Daniel, did you know it's illegal?
You know, when I saw this statement, I really started laughing because we've seen so many viral videos of people standing in parking bays trying to book the space.
Yeah.
And, you know, I used to laugh at these people.
Right,
I used to laugh at this video until it happened to me.
It's happened to you. It's happened to me as well.
Yeah, it's happened to me. And my wife said, you know, just run her down.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, you know, I would love to, but I don't want to damage my bumper.
I don't want to damage my bumper. I have a car website. People might put two and two together.
Exactly,
and I'll be in
exactly.
Trouble. Yeah.
But the thing is, you see, people do this because they are a little bit, the Malaysian word is kiasu, Richard. You know, they think they must have that car park spot.
That's what we call Singaporeans, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I think the problem is because there's a lack of space in every mall, every housing area. So when people find a space, for example, when I came to the studio today, Saturday. It's not a crowded day. It's a Saturday. Mm. But to get a car park space in this area is not easy.
You're right.
Because I didn't want to park in the building because I didn't want to pay.
Yeah, yeah. It's not cheap. Speaking of money, though, I mean, the PDRM says, you know, obviously they've said you can't book a parking space for your friend by standing in it. Yeah. They are saying it's a 2,000 ringgit fine or 6 months in jail. And here's the thing. It's always been illegal, according to Section 50 Road Transport Act of 1987. Right. So do you actually think anything will change? You know, will it stop people? And I mean, to be fair,
have you
ever seen a policeman inside a car park?
Exactly. I was just trying to get to that. How are you going to police this?
Yeah.
How are you going to get police guys to go into shopping malls and housing areas and say, the guy, what, you're standing there? The guy said, no, I'm just standing here looking at the sun.
Yeah.
It's just to scare people into not doing it. But I think, you know, the invention of the smartphone with the camera is also helping to stop people from doing this as much as
name
possible.
And shame, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But yes, it's a topic we're very keen on. We've all had this happen to us. And I think, like you're right in saying, it's very likely to scare people to stop doing it. Let's hope
That's it.
All right. Story number two, the MAI, the Malaysian Automotive Institute, supports the third national car.
What a surprise.
Right. Here we go. Its CEO, Datuk Ahmadani Sahari, said the third national car came in at the right time to complete the automotive industry. A couple of points here. He spoke about the growing R&D part of the automotive sector. There's going to be a focus on connected mobility. Here is the thing. The national car will be electric and the national automotive policy, the NAP, will be EV focused. We actually had a clip from the breakfast grill not too long ago. MAI CEO Datuk Madani Sahari explaining the motives behind the third national car.
One of the segments of the product to be produced by this third national or new national car should be an EV car. You know, the reason being is, you know, early on we talk about technology uplifting in Malaysia. EV presents itself as a technological uplift. So apart from the motor and the inverter stuff, but what's more important on an EV is actually the battery itself. And lithium ion battery is the technology not only meant as energy storage for the car, but it can be expanded to become an energy storage for energy security. And of course, in the future, when cars are connected, we're going back to the connectivity, this energy from the car can go back to the grid and vice versa. So all these are really part and parcel of technology uplifting and technology deployment using a car as that, again, moving platform, but at the same time, it can serve other purposes for energy security, etc. and so on.
So that was him speaking on the Breakfast Grill.
Right.
We actually have a second clip as well. I think we'll play that clip now. Let's have a quick listen to that.
There's that review of the National Automotive Policy, the NAP, that's been highly anticipated for quite some time now. Initially slated for the middle of this year, then pushed back to Q3, now saying year end. Is that timeline still intact?
Now, when the new government came in, our minister announced, will be there, will announce year end. We are working very hard to get to the deadline by year end.
And is that when you'll reveal the details of that IP?
No, actually, under new government, we'll do the good regulatory practice. Actually, we are trying to upload the review of the policy to the public, you know, for at least a month and a half, for the public to read the details of the policy and to come back to government before it will be finalised.
See, Han there from the Breakfast Grill, of course, pushing MAI CEO Datuk Madani Sahari about the NAP and what they're going to declare at the end of the year, allegedly. Are we going to see any changes? Are we going to hear about anything by the end of the year, do you think?
I think this is my guess. Number one, the hybrid incentives are actually going to slow down.
Right.
Because until today, the only hybrid cars that are selling very well are all luxury hybrids.
Yeah.
So the luxury brands, we know who they are, have been enjoying this so-called honeymoon period and selling thousands of vehicles and reducing tax income for the government of Malaysia because of hybrid incentive. Mm. But the buyers of these cars are not people like myself and producer Ali, you know. They're people like you, Richard, you know, who earn big salaries.
I do not earn a big salary. So, don't spread wild rumors.
Don't interrupt me. So the thing is, I believe that the new MITI minister has come to light to see this, and also the new government has realized that this has not benefited the population at large.
Right.
So I think there will be a shift in how the EV incentives will be given. And I think it'll filter down to lower price cars, which will help actually normal Malaysians own a car at a slightly lower price.
That has to happen. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
If you're looking at stuff like populist policy and you want people to potentially vote for you in the next election and you want people who are a little bit more, green-minded,
yes,
the younger generation perhaps, to vote for you in the next election, you've got to prove to them that you are committed to making a difference.
Exactly.
And one of those big differences is the electric vehicle.
Yes. And I think the next thing that they should do is, which I don't think will be easy to do, but they have to take away the AP system.
Right.
We should have it, I think personally, and you heard it here first on BFM Cruise Control, we should have a system like what they do in Singapore, where the COE, this is their version of the AP, the Certificate of Entitlement, have it in an open system where the money comes back to the government, not given to individuals to distribute and enjoy the spoils of the profit. So if you say now MITI itself can issue, say now they've got 30,000 APs out there divided within so many people. Take it all in and say, okay, Richard, you can buy a car, come and bid for your AP. Ali, you want to buy a car, come and bid for your AP. So the bidding price goes just like how they do in Singapore.
Yeah, yeah.
Some months is higher, some months is lower. And the individual former AP holders can also come and bid.
Right.
And fair playing field, you try and make some money out of imported cars.
Make it level. Yeah.
And then you'll see Malaysian car prices coming down, tax department earning more money, which can be transferred back into public transport, medical, schooling, and all kinds of other things. And also the taxpayers, the real burden on the taxpayers will be lower now.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, all this needs time.
Yeah.
And you're going to twiddle a lot of thumbs here, and you're going to affect a lot of people which have been enjoying a very good life.
I mean, and that's what I was going to say. Not only does it take time, but it's going to take somebody with guts to make
exactly
that decision and see it through,
yes,
and not be kind of, you know, pushed around.
But I think our Prime Minister has got the guts to do it.
I hope so.
He's got nothing to lose.
Exactly, I hope so. Now, sticking with this story very quickly, here's a question. So MAI support the third national car, but the MAA, the Malaysian Automotive Association, is against it.
Okay.
What's the difference between the two, and why are they on opposite ends of the spectrum?
Okay, MAA has been around for a long time. They've been there, they've been doing their job. Dato' Aisha has been there running it professionally for the longest time. They've never been in the limelight because it's not their job to be in the limelight. MAI wants to be in the limelight.
Right.
MAI wants to have the whole of Malaysia looking at them and saying, job well done. You're a government agency. You're not supposed to be in the limelight.
Mm.
Number two, that is all my personal opinion. Number two, the very important factor of MAA not supporting this, even though Dato' Aisyah is supporting the Prime Minister, Tun Mahathir, is simply because look at our population of car owners and compare it to, say, Indonesia and Thailand. We are so much smaller. Mm. We are so much smaller. Why do we need a third national car? And in fact, this is actually the fourth national car. The first national car was Proton. The second one was Perdua. The third one was actually NASA. For a short while, NASA had a national car policy because they actually brought in some cars, very, very low-priced cars, as a national car. They got that incentive.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so in theory, this is the fourth national car. And why have we always had a problem with national cars?
Yeah, why is it a deal? Why do we have to have
one? Exactly.
What's the importance behind it?
Exactly. If imagine now we don't have a national car program. Scrap it all. Level playing field.
Mm.
You will have all the Japanese K cars coming in. You know, those little minute cars, which cannot be sold here because of Perdua's dominance and Proton's dominance for some time. But you can have all these cars coming in. Small, compact, highly efficient, because they all use three-cylinder engines, small turbochargers. Mm. They're little boxy little things. They look like the old Canaries.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and they're very popular in Japan.
Yeah.
But why can't we sell them here? Because of our national car policy.
Mm. Okay, moving away from the national car policy just for a little while. This is a third story so far about augmented reality in our cars. I mean, we spoke not too long ago about cars that were having huge screens inside them and a whole bunch of different kind of distractions. So this is something that Porsche and Hyundai are investing in. They're investing in augmented reality. Could be in Porsches and Hyundais by 2020. They've teamed up with a company called Wayray, who are a tech company focused on augmented reality in cars. It could make cars feel a little bit like being in a video game. You'll see ghost cars, potential lap times, racing lines and a mini map. But for normal driving, imagine you had Waze in AR. So you could see crosswalks, you'd know when a warning sign is coming up, full HD map of the city, all projected onto a little screen just in front of you. Now, we already have a little screen just in front of us. We normally call it the iPhone or the smartphone.
Exactly.
One thing or
another. Do we need another one?
Do we need another one?
So I'm not saying anything.
Right. So the question is, I mean, I was looking at this and I've seen you can buy these little glass mirrors or whatever they are that you can. They're very cheap. You put, you lay your phone down, and it essentially projects this onto your window. You've seen these, right? Isn't that exactly the same as what this already is?
Yeah.
Just these guys are talking about doing it on the whole windscreen.
Also, and then this one they can charge more money,
and they can charge an awful lot more
money.
Exactly. Yeah. No, we don't like this.
I think there's enough distraction in the car. No matter how bad things get, there's way too much distraction. Let's get away from it. All this is just trying to sell a gimmick to the younger generations who are just taken in by, you know, gaming and
flashing lights,
flash and all kinds of things. And they don't need this because you're in a moving vehicle.
Mm.
It is a missile.
Yeah.
At some point, it is a missile. It's a bullet. It can actually go wrong and kill somebody. Bearing in mind that we don't want this to happen, but, you know, it does happen.
Yeah.
No matter how technology says they can control the vehicle, it has gone wrong before and it'll keep going wrong.
I mean, even my taxi drivers now have problems sorting out Waze whilst they're going to one place. You know,
exactly.
Having Waze projected on your screen is not necessarily a good thing, I don't think. Okay, let's move on to new cars then. That's some news out of the way. Quick new cars. Local, 2019, the Maserati Levante, is it? Levante S?
Yes.
You need to talk to me about this. 788,000 ringgit.
That's actually a direct competitor to the Porsche Cayenne.
Uh-huh.
But it's a Maserati. And you know, when you talk about Maserati, you have to change your vocals a bit. Maserati.
See, and this is the beautiful thing, right? You talk about, what was it last week we were talking about? You have a BMW, you have a Mercedes, but then you turn up with a Porsche.
Right.
Okay, you can turn up with a Porsche, but if you turned up with a Maserati.
Exactly.
That's even taking it one step further, isn't
it? It's taking up a few steps further.
A few steps further, yeah.
You know, and then you sit there and you say, hey, my Maserati. You know? It's like a Ferrari. You know, it's like the engine, it comes from the same factory.
So, direct competitor with the Porsche Cayenne.
Direct competitor of the Porsche Cayenne. Very aggressive looking.
Yeah.
It's not to everyone's taste. because it's got a lot of flanks, a lot of lines on it. But I like it because why? It stands out.
Mm.
Because there's so many Porsche Cayennes on the road. There are so many BMW X5s and Mercedes GLEs and all on the road. But how many Maseratis?
I think the whole time I've been in Malaysia, I can probably count five or six.
Exactly. And think about the price. It's not that high. If you're in that earning bracket, Richard, like you are.
Stop it. The final local one, the Land Rover Discovery Sport, coming in at 380,000. It gets a 2-litre turbo.
Yes. This is a tried and tested engine already with the Jaguars. So it's a very good engine, very simple, straightforward. 9-speed gearbox, and the gearbox comes from ZF. So ZF is already tried and tested. All this is very nice. Only problem is a lot of people look at a Land Rover and forget that it's actually part of the Range Rover family.
Yeah.
It's just like Land Rover is, you know, the forgotten child of Range Rover when you talk about premium SUVs.
Right, yeah.
And you think about it, you're getting this vehicle with all the technology that you find in a Range Rover without the badge for 379,000 ringgit.
Right. I mean, when I was growing up, the Land Rover was the thing that you saw in the countryside.
Exactly.
The Range Rover was the thing that you saw in the city.
Yes. And if you look at this vehicle closely, if you look at the pictures, it looks exactly like an older sibling to the Range Rover Evoque.
I see.
Which costs more money and is smaller.
Right.
But it's got everything underneath. The technology, everything is the same. So if I'm really going to be a pompous little Malaysian, I will buy this Discovery at 370,000, take out the badges, put a Range Rover badge on it, and drive around. And nobody will correct me.
I was going to say, you know people will do that as well.
Yes, but nobody will correct me. People say, hey, you bought a new Range Rover. I say, yeah, I bought a new Range Rover.
How much?
600,000. They'll believe me.
Of course they will.
Yes.
Right, final one for global new cars. The Volvo V60 Cross Country, slightly taller Volvo wagon. Apparently, it's ultra cool.
It is ultra, ultra sexy looking wagon. But the problem is, global market, fantabulous. When you come to Malaysia, who buys wagons?
Mm-hmm.
Malaysians, you know, they're not the wagon
family culture. Men with large families.
Okay, they'll go and buy an SUV.
That's true.
Because what's an SUV? Many years ago, there was no SUV.
Okay, so
what they did was they took a wagon.
Yeah.
They raised it.
Yes.
And they called it an SUV.
Yeah. Right. So a wagon is something that you would traditionally use to take a large family on long journeys, longer journeys.
Because you have luggage space and everything else. And the average family has basically 4 to 5 persons. So the wagon is perfect. And then you got all your load space at the back. So even if you want to take your family pet along, you have space.
Yeah.
But nobody's looking at that anymore. They're all looking at SUVs. Because they want that high riding position.
Mm.
So with this Cross Country, if you look at the pictures carefully, it is raised a little bit. It is not a slam down wagon. So it's somewhere between an SUV and a standard wagon. That's why they call it a Cross Country.
I see.
If you remember some time ago, Volvo had an XC70 Cross Country,
which actually
did very well overseas,
right?
But not in Malaysia.
Right, so that was the news without Arif Ruse. Do stick around though. When we come back, we will be talking about, on our AT&T segment, what factors affect electric battery life, and our non-car review will be why can't we buy a 2x4 pickup truck with an auto gearbox. You are tuned in to Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9 at the Business Station. This is Cruise Control. Welcome back. My name is Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Daniel Fernandez.
There you go. We have no Arif Ruse on the show this week. He will be joining us, of course, though, next week. Now, moving on to our AT&T segment. What factors affect electric vehicle battery life? Daniel, school me, educate me, top of knowledge seeking.
I have to school you on this because it's going ahead.
Yep.
The next national car.
Apparently so,
yeah,
right?
The next national car is going to be electric.
We called it.
Even if it's not completely electric, it'll definitely be EV.
Yeah.
And it'll slowly move to a full electric version, given enough time. Whichever way it goes, let's look at how we're going to keep these batteries moving for 8 to 10 years.
Auto technology and tips brought to you by Volvo, made by Sweden.
Now, why 8 to 10 years? Because the average lifespan of a battery is 8 to 10 years for electric vehicles and hybrid vehicles. The first thing people have to understand is how how it works, how important it is to understand how your electric battery works, your lithium-ion battery.
Because they're not like the batteries you can buy at the corner store.
Exactly. And a lot of people, we've mentioned this before in many other shows, it's like your smartphone battery and your computer battery, but it's slightly different because it's sitting in a vehicle. And there's a lot of factors that your smartphone and laptop will not be subjected to, like how it's subjected to in a car. Number one, high temperatures.
Yep.
Now, yes, we walk around with our smartphones and laptops, but it's not sitting in a vehicle in the sun and it's being pounded by the weather. So high temperatures is one issue. A lot of people I've spoken to tend to think, no, you know, it's already been tested. Yes, it's tested in, like, say, Middle East or the middle of the desert in Australia. Yes, very hot, 45, 50 degrees Celsius. But we have got a combination of high temperature and humidity.
Agreed.
Okay?
Yes.
So that's something which we have to think about. Another thing is, a lot of people must understand, with an EV battery, you do not overcharge it at high voltage. Okay? You always go 98, 97, 96, 95%. Now, when you talk about handphone batteries or laptops, they always say, okay, charge full and then remove, charge full. Now, I don't understand really why with a car lithium-ion battery, they're saying, don't go right to the max.
Interesting.
Okay. Did some research, can't find a very straightforward answer to this. So I'm going to talk to some people and try and get the answer. But the problem is, there are not a lot of battery experts in the country that can give you a definitive answer, because I think they are also trying to figure out our temperature and humidity, how it affects the battery.
Right.
Okay?
Just on that point, are there any countries in this area, in the tropics, that have the same issue that we do, that face the same issue in terms of, you know, wanting to bring in electric vehicles?
But you see, we seem to be the only country that's really charging ahead.
Right, right. What about over in South America or anywhere like that?
South America, not much.
Nothing.
Australia is dry heat, as you know. New Zealand, dry heat, so there's no issue. Singapore is not moving very fast in this, and they don't have the quantity. Thailand, Indonesia, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, all not doing it much.
So we could actually solve a very big issue if we chose to do so.
Yes. We should be the test bed for all these people if they want to come into Southeast Asia.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
The other thing is that they said, don't do deep discharges. That means don't let the battery go right down to zero.
It can't go flat.
It can't go flat.
Right.
That's another thing. And then they say, don't do a high discharge or current charge with a quick charger.
Right.
Now, a lot of people will definitely use the quick charger, just like with your laptop and your iPhone. If you're at home, you don't mind putting it on a normal charger and, you know, let it take its course in time. But if you're on the move in a car, if you're trying to get to your journey, you want a quick charge.
You do.
You know, you're not willing to wait an hour for a slow charge. You say, no, I want a quick charge. So these are all issues that I think are going to come to light pretty soon if it's not looked at.
Wow. Stuff like the quick charge, like you say, on a phone is something that it's useful because you can just, if you've seen them in the malls, these little charging ports, you turn up, you 5 minutes and your phones, you can make a couple more phone calls or whatever.
Correct.
I suspect that if you're in a car, it would be, you can probably make it to the next decent charging state or home. You know, so what they're saying is that it's better for it to trickle charge.
Yes.
Is it? Interesting.
But the reasons why, I really don't understand. Mm. I'm still trying to figure that out. All this is new. So everyone you speak to is also learning as we go along. Mm-hmm. And I think to have Malaysia as a test bed for learning, you're going to have a lot of problems if you don't do this properly. Because why? If you start selling thousands of these cars and thousands of these batteries are sitting around and they start failing, where are you going to dispose thousands of these batteries?
Well, not only that, but we don't want, as a national car, the first thing to happen is a mass recall.
Exactly.
Right? Because that will just ruin the whole project forever.
Exactly, exactly.
This segment was brought to you by Volvo. Inspiring technology, shaping tomorrow's mobility.
Okay, that, of course, was our AT&T segment. We're going to move on to our non-car review now about... incidentally, why have we not got a car review? Just out of fun.
During the GST free months, people were just selling cars like you know,
hot cakes,
like donuts, you know, and everything was sold out. And nobody expected this run. Yes, there have been some car launches, but the car launches now have suddenly not excited the car market simply because people have stopped buying cars. So when people stop buying cars, the need for, you know, giving out cars for tests and all have slowed down. And I think also because coming to the end of the year, nobody really wants to buy a car at the end of the year because they want the 2019 registration on their car.
Okay, so why can't we buy a 2x4 pickup truck with auto transmission?
Okay, I bring this up because I still remember some years back, I brought back a Ford Ranger when it was first out. And it was a 3.2 Wildtrak. Fantastic truck. For its time, it was way ahead of the Hilux, way ahead of the Triton, and way ahead of all the other, you know, offerings from, you know, Chevrolet and whatever else, Mazda. But the Ranger Wildtrak sold like hotcakes. People wanted it. Now, when I brought it home, of course, you know, sometimes a lot of times I get my wife to test drive the vehicles I bring back. So I said, hey, here's a truck. Go and try it. She said, oh, yes. You know, she's a small-sized woman. And she said, yeah, truck, you know. I want to get into this truck and see what it's all about. She got in the truck. She loved the interior. Because why? Previous trucks were a little bit utilitarian,
a little bit,
you know, Jurassic. Now you see this really modern car-like cabin, you know.
I remember back in 96, traveling in a Toyota Hilux for 500 miles.
Whoa.
It was the most uncomfortable thing I'd ever been in.
Exactly. Even in the front seat.
Yeah.
You know?
It only had front seats back then.
Yes. if you're in a double cab in the rear seat, at one time I think I was maybe 45 minutes or an hour in the back seat. I told him, I said, listen, I can't take this anymore. I'm an old man. I'm just going to break my whole back. This is too bumpy. The seats are too thin. It's not comfortable at all.
Yeah.
Today, it's, of course, a lot different.
Totally different, yeah.
But it's still not like a passenger car. So she got into the car. She drove it and we're driving around and she said, oh, it's so nice and everything else. But here comes the problem. After she drove it, she came back and said, you know, why is the price so cheap if you compare to an SUV? Because number one, there's a very low tax on pickup trucks because of the AFTA agreement and everything else. Second thing is, pickup trucks tend to enjoy basic necessities in terms of what's underneath. But as they've evolved in the last few years, they've all become equivalent to SUVs in terms of what you get, you know, the 4x4, safety features, airbags, everything else. So the price has still remained very competitive. Why? Also because they come from Thailand. They're made in Thailand. They got the preferential, local assembly tax incentives. So now comes my argument, my debate here. My wife says, buy me a pickup truck. Price is good, 120,000. You can get a premium truck with all the safety features. Can take the kids once in a while. You can put your bikes at the back. If you want to go and do any shopping, you got the cover, so you don't have to worry about rain. And then if your neighbor decides to move house, you can help them with the truck. And
you become a local hero
and become, you know, maybe charge 50 ringgit, earn some money, you know, things like that. It's all good news. But here's the problem: nobody's going to go off road with it.
Mm.
We're all urban cowboys,
right?
She's an urban cowgirl.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to go off road, so. Why do I need to buy a vehicle with off-road, heavy-duty off-road equipment, which I'm not going to use off-road?
Mm.
Another thing, when you use a 4x4, it's high.
Yeah.
Older generation people, like parents and in-laws and all that, have a difficult time getting in and out. So we thought about a two-wheel drive pickup truck, also much cheaper. But when we shopped around, and we really shopped around, there's not a single brand in Malaysia that sells a two-wheel drive pickup truck automatic.
Not a single one.
They're all manual.
What about on the international market? They must be available.
There is.
Right.
You can find them in Australia. You can even find them in Indonesia. I think Thailand has only got one model. But the thing is now, why is it not sold in Malaysia?
I was just going to ask you the same question.
So the idea is now, for less than 100,000, I want, because the price is about that, a two-wheel drive double cab pickup truck with an automatic gear shifter. Why? Because I'm going to be driving it in the city. It's two-wheel drive. It'll be slightly lower. I can still go through floods. I can still carry all my barang. I can still do everything. But I don't need that 4x4 drivetrain, right? But I want that automatic gearbox.
But so there is 4x4 automatic.
4x4 automatic, all have it.
Why not just compromise and have the 4x4? I mean, I know you say you don't need the off-road capability, but it's always nice.
But you're paying for something
that you don't really use.
And then it's taller.
And what's the price difference?
And then it's heavier. It's about 15,000 to 20,000. So that's money which I can go on a holiday.
Yeah.
So we started shopping and everybody we spoke to, every brand said, sorry, we don't bring it in. Sorry, we don't bring it in. I said, okay, what about, you know, if I want to order one? Sorry, cannot. So you cannot buy. And you can do your research on this, because if you go to DSF, we've actually done our research. We've shown all the price list of all the brands of pickup trucks on sale in Malaysia, I mean the official brands, and none of them, not a single one, has a two-wheel drive automatic double cab for sale.
So that's the That's your point for today.
And my point for today.
That feels like you're putting it out there and saying, look, guys, you're not doing enough. Yes. Help the missus out.
Yes.
And help me out.
Yeah. And you see, in a few months' time, Ford will be launching the all-new Ranger.
Right.
10-speed.
Right.
Full of features. Fantastic cabin equipment. Comfort levels. Everything. Size. The thing looks menacing. But there will be no double cab, two-wheel drive automatic, I checked.
And how much would that be roughly coming in at, do you think?
Around the same price it's sitting at right now, which is very, very favorable.
Mm. Which is?
Around 110,000 to 120,000.
Not too bad at all.
Exactly.
Right. It's pretty much time for us to wrap up then, ladies and gentlemen. This, of course, has been Cruise Control here on BFM 89.9. If you missed any part of the show, we started off with some news, of course, without Ari Frews. The stories were standing in a parking space is illegal, officially. We knew that already. You can get yourself a 2,000 ringgit fine or end up with 6 months in jail. We then moved on to the MAI, the Malaysian Automotive Institute, supporting the third national car, which will be electric, and focus will be on connected mobility. We then looked at augmented reality in cars, and then we did some car launches. Of course, we then moved on to our AT&T segment about what factors affect electric vehicle battery life. Top tip, do not quick charge it too often. Let it trickle charge. And then, of course, we wrapped up with why we can't buy a 2x4 pickup truck with an auto gearbox here in Malaysia. Daniel Sherman Fernandez.
Yes, Richard Bradbury.
Thank you very much for joining us this week.
Thank you for having me. Yes.
Of course, we will be back same time, same place next week here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.